In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swung, hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
What can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddies.
Welcome to Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, episode 155. 155. We made it to the mid-mark of the hundreds, I guess, over the mid-mark. I'm your host, John Senecal. I'm flying solo this week. Brian is actually on vacation in an out of country, so he's enjoying his time taking his daughter on a little high school graduation trip. So I hope he's having fun. And maybe when he comes back, there'll be some better news for the Red Sox. I know the Yankees are rolling, so let's get an idea of what we're going to be talking about this episode. We're going to do a little team updates with the Yankees and the Red Sox, which will also lead into us talking about the Yankees and the Red Sox first official meeting of the season coming up. And we're going to talk actually a little Japanese baseball, too. No, Trevor Bauer is not going back to Japan. We will talk something other than Trevor Bauer. And we're going to talk a little bit about fans coming on the field. And when I talk about, fans rushing the field and what happens to them. And there was a very cool incident. Well, not cool for the person, but pretty cool for people that were watching in Cleveland the other day. And we'll talk about that. So let's get to the Yankees and the Yankees-Red Sox team updates. Obviously, the Yankees are rolling, continue to roll. Judge is out of his mind. There was a little bit of scare with Soto, and I think that's obviously, I feel like that's something you have to keep an eye on. Now, he sat out the Dodgers series, so he basically sat out for, 4 days and came back against the Royals, and he's doing his typical stuff. He's getting on base, but it was a forearm issue. So, forearm issues usually lead to elbow issues, and as much as you'd like to, think that he's okay, it's definitely something we're going to have to watch. You're going to have to watch that because, he's 25 years old or 26. And listen, if he is hurt anyway, even if it's minor, he's going to play through it. He is going to play through it. He's in a contract year. Even if he didn't play the rest of the season, he's still going to get a good contract. But the Yankees have got something special going, and he is going to play through it. For the pure reason he's 25, he can play through it. I mean, if he had more of an issue brewing in there, Shohei played with it, Bryce Harper played with it, countless players have played with elbow issues, but he still has to be a contributing part of the team. So something to keep an eye on. Judge still doing Judge things, which is unbelievable. Batting over 400 still for the, over the last, 40 games or something. It's just insane. So I'm not even going to beat that horse anymore. What we will talk about is Gerrit Cole will be making another start. As we speak now, that start will be tomorrow against the Rochester Red Wings. And so he'll be making his second AAA start. And most people are saying that that's probably his last start in the minors, his start before he went 4 2/3, gave up one run. But still, the one run, I believe was a home run. But he's fine. He's doing what he needs to do. The one thing I'm a little concerned about is his last start. He didn't get the pitch count up. The pitch count was still, I believe, in the 50s. He's throwing strikes, though, which is good. But I think, if he's going to be coming back to the rotation to contribute, you're going to want to see him around the 80 pitch mark before he gets up. So I just don't see if they're going to stretch him out an extra 30 pitches in his next start. We will see. But if he makes it through his next upcoming minor league rehab start, I would suspect that you will probably see Gerrit Cole maybe sometime next week, which puts us, towards the end, not the end of June, but, right around the beginning of summer, June 20th, 21st, 22nd, around there, which would be interesting. So time will tell on that. The other injury news to talk about with the Yankees is the Martian, Jason Dominguez. So Jason Dominguez, as of now, has been officially transferred off the injured list, which means he had to be assigned somewhere. So he's been assigned to AAA Scranton, where he has been for the last week and where he's been playing center field, too. He's been playing the outfield. And he's just he's continuing to do what he did before he got injured. He's got 81 at-bats in the minors this year. He's batting .358, 6 home runs, 13 RBIs, 2 stolen bases, OPS over 1. The only thing keeping him from coming to the majors right now is the fact that the Yankees have probably the arguably one of the best outfields in baseball, and Verdugo's playing left field, and I don't see that changing. Let's be honest. Dominguez needs at-bats. You know, he didn't have much at all last year in the minors, and then came right up and made an instant impact with the Yankees before getting injured. So he needs more at-bats, and this is not hurting him one bit to be in AAA. And, you know, most likely I would guess he'll probably spend the rest of the season in AAA, barring any injuries for the Yankees, and probably get called up towards the end of the season when they expand the rosters. Maybe something to see him on the roster for a playoff run, much like Jeter had in 95. So let's, or at least in the dugout. So let's hope for good things for him to continue. And Yankees and Red Sox are going to play their first 3-game set of the season together Friday, Saturday, Sunday. As of right now, there's no starters announced for that series. Everything's TBD. I mean, listen, it's, you know, the show's the greatest rivalry in sports. Obviously, it's historically the greatest rivalry in sports. Right now, 2024 terms, definitely not. I'll give you the Jake Schakman positive note of the week. And I think the only really positive thing right now for the Red Sox is that, you know, in the AL East, the Rays and the Jays suck. So, you know, the wild card, they're going to be fighting with the AL Central and possibly the AL West. So I think that bodes well for the Red Sox. You know, let's be honest, they're a mediocre team. They are performing. They're 2 games out as we speak of the wild card. So they're in the hunt. Now, we've talked about it before. Will they make a move? Who knows? They have chips that they could trade. Obviously, Tyler O'Neill, need I say Pivetta, Chris Martin. So they have chips that they could deal if need be, but they need to get healthy. I don't see the Red Sox getting on a heater if they get in the playoffs, if they make it and winning the whole thing, but you never know. So we will see with that. I would expect nothing other than the Yankees to sweep them. The Yankees have basically manhandled the Royals. I believe they scored 10. You know, they got one more game on Thursday against them in the 4-game set they played. But I believe they scored, as of their third game, 10 first-inning runs against them. And, you know, the Yankees, as a season, I believe have scored 57 first-inning runs, just second to the Phillies. And they've hit 20 first-inning home runs. Now, if you want to put that into perspective, how much that is and how special that is, the Blue Jays have scored 20 first-inning runs alone, and the Yankees have 20 first-inning home runs. So it's easy to see real quick why the Jays are where they are in the basement and probably not going to get out. So Yankees-Red Sox, I would expect, like I said, a sweep, and, you know, maybe something fun will come out of it. I mean, the Yankees just keep hitting. So, I mean, for me as a Yankee fan, I just want to see him just whoop them and sweep them so we can just get on with it. What I will talk about with the Red Sox and what I think is interesting is the head Monopoly man, and I say Monopoly man, you know, because you look on the guy who holds all the cards and all the money, John Henry, did an interview with the Financial Times, and he was asked about the Red Sox chances this year. And he said, well, they have a 1 in 30 chance. Now, obviously, you know, that is everybody's got a 1 in 30 chance because there's 30 teams in Major League Baseball. And then he went on to say, well, they have a 1 in 20 chance. So, you know, there's a few things, in my opinion, that's wrong with that. I'd like to know the 10 teams that he obviously thinks the Red Sox are better. I mean, yeah, we could probably, you know, the Oaklands and the White Sox and that, but he clearly must have thought this out, and he thinks that the Red Sox are, you know, better than 10 teams in baseball. But at the same time, why are you saying that? I mean, you have a team that's 2 games out of the wild card. You have a fan base that's obviously upset with you. You have players that are obviously have been critical of the way the team is run, and you're going to come out and make a comment like that? It just makes absolutely no sense. And this is a guy who never publicly comments about his team. I believe the last time he did was after they traded Mookie Betts before the 2020 season. And that's, 4 years ago? Maybe even 5 years ago, because it was before the season. So, you know, if you're gonna talk, you know, like we said before, you know, when Hal Steinbrenner talks, people listen. And you know, when John Henry's going to talk, people are going to listen, especially Red Sox fans and the players. you know, they talked, they asked, you know, Kenley Jansen about what he thought, and Liam Hendricks came out and talked about it. You know, they weren't like super critical because obviously they're still on the team. But Kenley Jansen was critical of the Red Sox early in the season about, you know, the direction they were going, and they weren't happy about the comments, but they tiptoed around it, you know, not saying too much, but just kind of saying they were a little upset about it. But again, you're an owner of a professional team. You're an owner of a conglomerate. You're the head dude. Like, think of something better to say. Send a better message. I mean, at least you could say is the team's playing great right now. You know, a lot of people had us not doing anything, but we're two games out of a wild card, and we'll, let's just see what happens. You know, we have a team that can compete, and if time comes, maybe we'll do what we need to do. Let's see what happens. You don't sit there and say you're 1-30 or 1-20. It's a joke. I mean, if your owner's talking like that, that's going to reflect what the team says, you know, or maybe they're going to take it like they did in the movie Major League and they're going to use it as motivation to prove them all wrong. I don't know. Who knows? We'll see. We'll see. It's just pretty low rent, in my opinion. So next thing I want to talk about is Japanese baseball. There's a league and that Major League Baseball has created called the Major League Baseball Draft League that plays over the summer, which is basically players that, you know, are finished the college baseball season and are high school season and are going to be drafted into the MLB in the draft in July. And these players will play, I think it's like four or five different teams, and they'll play against each other in the different spots along the East Coast. And one of the teams is, it's basically Showcase League. And one of the teams is the Trenton Thunder. Now it's, you know, Trenton Thunder used to be the Yankees AA team, which has now become the Somerset Patriots. So I'm guessing just using all the old uniforms and the stadium. So on the Trenton Thunder is a Japanese player named Rintaro Sasaki. Now, Rintaro Sasaki is the top Japanese prospect in all of Japan going into the Major League Baseball draft, which he wouldn't be eligible for. So he would be going into the Japanese professional, the Nippon Baseball League draft. And if you get drafted, you're going to be on a Major League Baseball team. I mean, a Japanese League team. For at least 9 seasons before you could post and go like Shohei did and countless others to the MLB. What's interesting about Sasaki is he's 19 years old. He's like 6 foot, I think like 205 pounds or 240 pounds. He's a big dude. He looks big, but he looks young. He went to the same high school as Shohei in Japan. And this kid in 4 years hit 140 home runs. 140 home runs in 4 years of high school baseball. Now, if that was like high school baseball and he was like playing again in like some lower tier country or whatever, that I wouldn't be that impressed. It's still super impressive. 20 home runs in a high school season is incredible, right? Especially anywhere, even the ones that play a longer season. But this kid hit 140 in 4 years. Now, to put that in perspective, Shohei at the same school hit 56 in 4 years. Now, I'm sure he was pitching a lot too, but still, we're talking about one of the best home run hitters in Major League Baseball now, and one of the best hitters in Major League Baseball now, only racked up 56 in 4 years, and this guy's got 140. So there's definitely something special about this kid. And I think what's even more special about him is the route he has chosen to take. So he's not going into the Japanese Baseball League. He is committed to Stanford University, and he is going to go play there. He's going to play baseball at Stanford, which means he'll be eligible for the Major League Baseball draft after his sophomore year in 2026. So if he's everything he's talked up to be, you're going to be looking at a huge draft pick, a huge signing bonus, and most likely a huge contract way, 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 way earlier than he would have got if he would have went the Japanese baseball route, which, I mean, is interesting because Is that something that's going to keep happening? Is that something, you know, obviously it doesn't really matter as far as in the international draft, because, you know, the Dominicans and, you know, whatever, Venezuela, the Latin countries, those guys are international draft, but Japanese players have never been eligible for that. And this, I believe, I've never heard of this happening before, where a big prospect, touted prospect that, you know, could be a huge draw for Japan over the next 9 years, has basically said, no, I'm going the Tiger Woods route. I'm going to Stanford. So is that something that we're going to see more often? I would say yes. I would definitely say yes, especially with how amazing and, you know, popular college baseball is becoming and how competitive it is, especially, you know, the trade portal, I mean, transfer portal and all that. So TBD on them. How he's going to do it at Stanford, I mean, I'm sure he's going to be fine, but we'll see. Interesting route he's taken, and keep the name in mind, Rintaro Sasaki. All right, fans coming on the field. It's an age-old thing. I mean, for our older listeners, there was Morgana back in the day, the kissing bandit, the blonde-haired lady with the big boobs. She'd run on the field, and, you know, the boobs would be flying all over the place, and she'd kiss a pitcher, or kiss a second baseman, or kiss an umpire, or kiss the San Diego Chicken, whatever it may be. But it was funny, right? Like, I think she might have gotten arrested the first time, but then it became like a thing, and she became a thing. But it's never been accepted in baseball to run on the field. And after you know, 9/11, everything got more locked down in security, and especially after COVID. And we've seen instances over the years. I believe, you know, a Kansas City Royals or White Sox first base coach. I can't remember. I know the White Sox were playing the Royals. I can't remember what stadium they were in. But two fans attacked the first base coach and beat him up pretty good. And we've seen other instances where fans, you know, in the stands, players get close to them in the stands, and they've had altercations. Or I believe even Gary Sheffield had a confrontation with a Boston fan. But there's always been the age-old drunks that run on the field, and they try to get on TV, and it gets more interesting, and it gets more interesting every year. And lately, it's been like, what kind of tackle is going to happen? What jacked-up security guard is going to wreck this dude that's running on the field? And what can the person do first on the field before he gets jacked up? I say he because I don't think I've ever seen a she since Morgana do this. So Morgana, you were a pioneer and the last one, I believe, to do it. So ladies, if you know, you might have to step up your game. But after the last incident in Cleveland, we're going to talk about this incident in Cleveland against the Cincinnati Reds. And this last incident, I think, might have people changing their minds. So if you want to see a picture of it, you search internet, search Cleveland Guardians fan rushes the field, and you'll see it. But basically what happened is this guy runs down to the field, and he runs out to the outfielder, Tyler Freeman, and he says something to Tyler Freeman in left field. And then he runs and he does a backflip, a standing backflip, and lands it as a cop is trying to, like, subdue him and stop him. And then he takes off running. Now, instead of this guy getting tackled, the cop zeroes in on him with his taser and just lights him up right in the back. And this guy drops like a sack of potatoes, like you would expect, right, from if you're getting tased. But the still pictures that were captured and spread across the internet are just priceless. I mean, first of all, the guy's running on the field in just his socks. And I'm guessing it has something to do with the flip he's going to pull off. I'm probably easier to do in bare feet and maybe land it. I don't know. But he came prepared, though, because he has glasses on and he has a strap on his glasses. So he's not going to lose his glasses. And it's probably better that he got tased so he didn't get trucked and tackled and crushed his glasses. But he did get tased. So I don't know. Is that worse than getting run over by a macho security guard or a cop? It's usually the security guards that take him out. But I feel like this cop was sending a message. I feel like he was sending a message, and he was telling his fellow law enforcement, his fellow men in blue and ladies in blue across the country, that it's different times. It's different times in Major League Baseball. If you're going to rush the field, there might be more consequences. It's not going to be a simple tackle and some zip ties behind your back. You're going to get tased and lit up and cuffed and stuffed and exploited across national media. So I just thought that was interesting. I mean, there's got to be some alcohol involved, but if this guy's drunk, he pulled off a pretty good backflip. And I just didn't see him as the backflip guy. But I guess if you were as friends of his, and you probably didn't have him getting tased on your bingo card either. So what an interesting incident there that was. And we'll see if that happens more. I mean, I don't know. Maybe fans are going to say, I don't want to get tased. But let's see what happens with that. All right, I'm going to give you a final thought for the week. We're approaching Father's Day. Father's Day is coming up this weekend, and obviously I'm a father. My son just graduated high school. He's going to be going off to college in the fall. So this is kind of like, you know, this is like the retrospect time for me as a father. Like, I've spent the last 18 years, I guess I'll say, raising him. So I had, you know, the moments of the birth and the first words and the dada. Is he going to say dada or mama first? I can't even remember if he did. I think he said ball first, actually, my son. And then the first steps and then all the other stuff that goes with it, the kindergarten graduations, blah, 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 all that. But, you know, the high school graduation is the first big, I would say, huge moment, you know, for your kid. It's something that they can literally look at that they accomplished, that you know, it wasn't easy. And it's also the first thing I think they can look at where they can say, you know, I finally basically did what I need to do. And if I don't want to do anything else, I can just go and, you know, do whatever. I've fulfilled my obligation. Well, I'm glad my son's heading off to college and he's going to further his education and we'll see what the future holds. But Father's Day, I mean, I think it means a lot of different things for a lot of different people. I mean, me personally, my father has passed away, so I don't have someone to call on Father's Day. I don't really have, it's never been a huge thing in my family. It never, you know, even when I had kids, you know, I look at it more of like, you don't need to be going and getting me things, and it's not something, a time to buy stuff. And I feel like it's more of a time where, you know, if I just want to sit around and do nothing, I'll just do nothing, you know, and, you know, maybe that's a bad thing, but, you know, oh, I want to go out and have lunch or have dinner, you know, whatever, you know, to each his own. You know, you want to have a barbecue, you want to go golf, you want to go golf with your buddies, you want to watch TV, whatever you want to do, you know, however you want to celebrate it. Me personally, I don't see it as a big deal. I mean, I think it's more of a time just to, it's another day, but, you know, it's good to recognize fathers. It's good to recognize people who step up to be a father. It's good to recognize fathers to stepchildren, those who have adopted kids, whoever it is. It's not an easy job. It's stressful. It's fun. It's rewarding. It's a financial strain, but it's not easy. And it's for those who do it and do it well, I commend you. It's an ever working process. I work on it every day. I'm not great at it. I'm not bad at it. I'll say I'm a middle of the road at it. But you know, my kids don't get in trouble. They're one's heading off to college. Another one's getting good grades. They love playing sports. I don't have the school calling. Parents say good things about them. So you know, I'm doing something right. We're doing something right, and I'm happy. I'm glad. Hopefully everyone else who's listening can have a great Father's Day. And hopefully when Father's Day comes, we will be looking at a three-game sweep, the Yankees over Red Sox. But that's like 4 days away as we speak. And I know Brian doesn't like me to date myself, but I am doing this podcast on Thursday. So the Yankees have one more game against the Royals, and then they are heading into Boston to knock some balls over the Green Monster and sweep up the Sox. So we will talk next week. And until then, this has been episode 155 of Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports.